Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
All right, here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport, in the house. Got David James making it happen, hitting switches, bringing this show aboard. We're going to get into various topics. Obviously, it's going to be another opportunity to talk wide receivers. We've got Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, coming on board, run TMC to get that out the way and get some conversation there. I want to get into offensive line a little bit, but first what we're going to do is there's a few things that happened recently for the Titans, and there's a trade. Ugo Amadi was acquired from the Eagles in exchange for a sixth-round pick. Ugo comes along with a seventh-round pick, 2024 seventh-round pick, in exchange for a sixth-round pick from the Eagles. That deal is very interesting, and there's a few reasons why. Just a little background on Amadi. He's 5'9", 201. 3 years of experience. He played with Seattle mostly, the Seahawks. He was a fourth-round pick in 2019. 125 tackles, and INT, and two forced fumbles, fumble recovery, 18 special team stops for the Seahawks. That was over his 47-game career. So you do have the special teams aspect. He's a guy who could play safety and corner. That's something that obviously they value, the versatility. Now, he was traded to the Eagles earlier this month, so he gets to change locations twice. But fortunately for him, he is an Overton High grad, so
Shout out. It's
basically one of those things where you could cue up the Mace music, right?
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing? You good?
I know you like that.
So that's what you have with Amadi. That's one, and then coupled with that, in order to make space, because they're at 80 players right now. Well, with Amadi on the roster, it was 81. You had to make space. So Monty Rice was relegated to PUP, physically unable to perform list. We know he had the Achilles injury, and he has, you know, been on the roster, but obviously not practicing. And, you know, again, he's on the PUP list, which means that he won't be available to them till after week four. Now, that's really interesting because you have the inside linebacker depth, right? And Monty Rice was a key guy behind Zach Cunningham and David Long before he got hurt. He even got a few starts and showed off there. And he also was a special teams contributor. I like the way he allowed special teams to bring him along as a linebacker. And that was really interesting. He went into a dissertation about that. I thought that was really cool. But it's funny because, so with him going down, you got a guy in Chance Campbell who did really well after he transferred to Ole Miss from Maryland. Matter of fact, I had a conversation with Campbell, and we talked about that whole idea of special teams contributing. But then we also just talked about his acclimation to the NFL. And it's good that we play this conversation because he is going to be relied upon much more, especially with Rice being on PUP. Here's Chance Campbell.
Home crowd. Yeah, it was cool. It was awesome to be able to kind of break the ice there and be in front of the home stadium, see how things are, you know, like a home team pro locker room. That was pretty neat.
I really like the way you seem to always be able to find the football. You know, and I know that's why you had 700 tackles last year. What is it about you that allows you to do that?
I don't know. I think some film study has been helpful. It's like trickier in the preseason because things are a little more off script. I think I had some success with that in college. I got to try to find a little bit more of that in the NFL and just kind of build it. But I think something I've done well in the past, but it's just I did it well in the past.
Right.
Now,
right. It doesn't always transfer.
Yeah. So I just got to keep working hard on that.
Coach Vrabel said that, you know, you're playing multiple positions. You stepped up when guys have gone down. Has it been difficult for you, you know, playing? I know it's similar, but, I mean, they're two different spots. So how has it been for you just to be able to grasp that?
It's been good. You know, it's like the more you can do, the better. And so I really appreciated that, to let me kind of try those things out, you know, because, you know, I recognize it's an opportunity, and I try to look at it like that in a positive light and just try to learn, try to grow in it. So it's something I'm excited about, but something I need, like, got a long way to go for that.
Another thing that's gotten better is your pass covers. You matched that one-on-one against your former teammate Chig earlier, and you held him, and even this past week, you know, a couple of PBUs. Are you, like, doing anything in particular to get better there, or is it just a comfort level? What's going on there?
Oh, I think the coaches are really comfortable in that, just understanding the leverage, and that's something, again, I have a lot of room to grow. So just trying to take little steps, you know, trying to narrow your vision a little bit. Not see too much, I think that's helpful. But like I said, there's some reps that I would wish I had back today too. But something I'm excited to work on.
Yeah, nobody's perfect. Last thing, special teams. That's a big opportunity for you to get your way onto the roster.
Absolutely.
How crucial is that for you?
Yeah, I can't understate how important that is, and that's the way that, you know, that's how I got my foot in the door when I was a freshman in college. And I've talked about this before, but the proudest moment I had in college when I got to play punt as a freshman. And I think special teams is crucial, and I had that same pride when I get shot at tape next year.
One more thing, I lied. I'm sorry, because it hit me as you were talking. Monty Rice, I remember talking to him about special teams and how that really allowed him to develop and transfer over to playing linebacker. For you, was that something that you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had a coach in college who explained it to me, I think, pretty well. And special teams is every part of the game, blocking, tackling, running, being physical. And so if you can do well with special teams, that'll translate to defense. And I think that, you know, special teams, you get to display every facet of football. And I think that's really fun, and it gives you a lot to work on.
So, obviously, you could tell that I really like the kid. I've been impressed with what he's been able to do. I enjoyed watching film of him. And it's funny because when you watch him play, you sometimes forget that this was a 4.5 guy. He ran a 4.5 at the cup, high 4.5, like 4.57, 39-inch vertical. So the traits are there. Yeah. So he's really intriguing. But then you got Dr. Jack Gibbons as well as depth at linebacker. So that's another option for them as far as guys. And Dylan Cole is in the mix, who we know made a name for himself on special teams last year. And then in addition to that, got some snaps at linebacker. So I think the inside linebacker position is going to be interesting. But I want to kind of shift a little bit to the DBs and specifically the safeties, because what we're seeing now is kind of a logjam at that position. Now, we know that Kevin Byard and Amani Hooker, those are the starters. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what's interesting to me, you know, in watching. So Josh Kalu, he's gotten some really significant reps. You know, you see him working in there, especially, you know, when they go to some of their sub packages. He had a solid game against the Bucks on Saturday, right? He came up and he laid a hit on one of the receivers. I forget who it was, but the ball came out. And then he had a couple pass breakups. He was pretty impressive. And then remember, they made the trade for Tyree Gillespie out of Missouri, who they made the trade with the Raiders for. Now he's in the mix, and you're talking about a 6'6", 207-pounder in the 4.3 range. He was actually a pretty solid safety prospect. He's someone, he came down, and just we're talking about, what, one or two practices, and already in the scheme making plays. He came down off the post the one time, and he had a pass breakup. And then you got Lonnie Johnson Jr., who's in the mix. And obviously there's a relationship there with him being formerly of the Texans before he, you know, was with the Chiefs. But you talk about 6'2", 213, mean, sticky type of coverage. Primarily coming out of Kentucky, he was a corner, but they shifted him to safety. There's obviously the familiarity with Anthony Midgett. So that's there. He came in his first practice. Shaheem Carter, who's no longer on the team, tipped the pass, and he picked it off. But you saw him get in there on Saturday and get some pass breakups also. So for me, like, it's really interesting how this safety position is shaping out, because you also have, man, we're like going over a lot of guys, right? So
yeah.
So we said Tyree Gillespie. They just acquired Ugo Amadi. We mentioned Josh Kalu. We mentioned Lonnie Johnson. Now, mind you, these guys are all competing for, like, one in a possible position. I would say probably two positions, right? They'll keep at least four safeties, maybe five.
Yeah.
So you look at that. Then you add in Adrian Colbert, who came in, made a couple plays in his first game against the Ravens, had a solid game. He had a pass breakup against the Bucks, and we saw him on Wednesday pretty active in practice against the Cardinals. So you have him, and then you mix in, by the way, they drafted Theo Jackson,
yeah,
the local kid, right, out of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. He is probably the guy, having played that star position at Tennessee, he's a guy that they're going to use a lot, in my opinion, in dime package. Very similar to how they used Dane Cruikshank before. And when you play that star position, right, you're playing all over the place. Single high sometimes. A lot of it is in the box. So essentially, you know, you're like a linebacker, which, hey, a dime backer, that's what you want. That's what Cruikshank did a lot of at Arizona. So there's similarities there. But he's a rookie. He's been in and out of the lineup. He practiced the last couple of days, which was a positive. So it's like, okay, you got these six guys. And there are others also, but I think these are the six primary guys. And, oh, by the way, Chris Jackson could play some safety if you want. And, oh, A.J. Moore, they brought him in, too, out of Houston, free agency. So we'll drop Chris Jackson out of it. There's seven guys, in essence, competing for two or three spots. I'm really focused in on that competition, and it's one that's kind of floating under the radar. There's going to be a pretty good player getting cut, you know. Yeah. I think Gillespie is a very, very solid option. You know, I like Lonnie Johnson, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think Lonnie Johnson Jr., just being as though he has those cornerback traits and has snaps at cornerback, I like him in matchups against tight ends. And in this day and age, you know, you got your Dawson Knox on the schedule. You got Dallas Goedert on the schedule. You got Evan Engram on the schedule twice. You got the two power forwards. You talk about the Twin Towers, Mo Alley Cox and Jelani Woods. You got them on the schedule twice. So there's plenty of opportunities to go against tight ends. I think, you know, Lonnie Johnson is a guy that I would strongly consider as a matchup option there. But at the same time, Adrian Colbert is a proven veteran.
Yes.
And then again, you have the athleticism from Tyree Gillespie. You have A.J. Moore, who is a very solid special teams player, and before he had a tweak injury, he wasn't in the mix. I mean, he was in the mix, you know, with significant reps when Amani Hooker was out. And then you got Josh Kalu. So there's so much as far as depth there. What do you do? And I think that's pretty much what they're facing. So we'll see what happens there. I wanted to open it up with some of the news and then also just look at how that impacts the roster. And I think when you look at some of these other positions, right, very likely that they keep three quarterbacks. It's possible that Woodside gets released and passed to the practice squad and Malik Willis is the backup. We'll see. But if they keep three quarterbacks, that's another area where you have to try to make up a roster spot elsewhere. Do they keep four tight ends? I doubt they do. I think they keep three, and you got Torrey Carter who could play tight end, so you keep, you know, your running backs. But what about Trenton Cannon? Do you keep four running backs and a fullback? So that's how it affects the roster. There's so many different spots at work. How many inside linebackers do you keep? So that's why I wanted to get into that and open up with that. We're going to go ahead to a break. We'll be right back. We need to talk a little more shop.
This is Jefferson. I'm talking with TD.
Back from the break, talking with TD. You hear the theme. Obviously, Jeffrey Simmons bringing us in. Biggie Smalls, Big Papa. It's time to talk about the big dogs. And I think it's only right we get into the right tackle position. Left guard is something that it seems like Aaron Brewer has pretty much shored up. Jamarco Jones has kind of been missing in action in multiple practices. So the left guard spot. You know, Aaron Brewer, tougher than a $2 steak. That's what Mike Vrabel said, and he's pretty much sealed that up. But right tackle, I tell you, that's the spot, David, that really I'm intrigued by because, you know, coming into camp, I thought it was going to be the reverse. I thought that left guard was going to be the competition because of how much they talked up Jamarco Jones, and right tackle was going to be the competition that was you know, it was going to be one, but not as much because Dylan Radins, it was basically his job. But
yeah.
Lo and behold, here we are. I guess we could start with just Dylan Radins. Okay. So let's go back to the Bucks game. We could go. There were some practices. I'll say this. You know, Rashad Weaver really stood out against him. There was one time where he blew him up, and he was able to. And I'm not going to say blew him up. He hit him with a nice move. He got behind him. Let's, you know, be right about this. And he blew up Hassan Haskins in a team period. There was another time where, and he was matched up. It was unfair, right? He was going against Akeem Hicks in joint practices against the Bucks, and that's just a matchup that it's not a fair one.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you're a starter, you're going to go against high-caliber defensive ends, et cetera, so you have to be able to hold up. Hicks kind of – I mean, I'm going to call a spade. He ran him over and route to the quarterback, and that's something that you can't have. But to Radinson's credit, a little bit later in practice, he had a nice block there to seal the edge. Hilliard – got up in there, bounced it outside, and had a long run. So it's not all bad from Dylan Radins, especially from a run-blocking perspective. He seems to have it there, but the pass pro is just not happening. And you see him getting ragdolled too much. And for me, you know, it's all about that initial punch. You have to be able to be – because in pass pro, you are kind of catching, but as you catch, you want to be able to give that punch also to – kind of stop the rusher in his tracks. And that's not happening. And, you know, again, you're catching some, but you can't catch to the point where you're being thrown on the ground. And that's something that Radins has to continue to work on. Now, what's really interesting to me is as of late, he's not taking reps at right tackle.
Yeah.
He's taking reps at left guard. And not in place of Aaron Brewer, but with the second group. So, I know Mike Vrabel said that it was something. Actually, you know what? Mike Vrabel was asked about that, and he said that it was something that they wanted to do because they were down a couple guys. Now, I'll give him that, right? You didn't have Nate Davis in the practice. Didn't have Jamarco Jones in the practice. So, they were a bit short at guard. Jordan Roos was getting some snaps at guard, but Radins at left guard. I understand the versatility standpoint, and that's something, yeah, you do want to do that. But if a guy's in a competition for a starting spot, you want him to compete at that spot. However, I digress. That's something that they're working out. I personally think that they've thrown the white flag. They're waving the white flag, throwing the towel. That's what they're doing on Radins at right tackle for right now. And I think the job is actually Nicholas Petit-Ferrars. And I asked Coach Vrabel, because it's funny because Petit-Ferrars, after taking first snaps with, you know, at right tackle, he was taking some snaps behind Luan at left tackle. And when you're doing that in one game, man, that's really tough. But he says that it's not an issue. Here's Petit-Ferrars about playing both positions within one game. I thought it was interesting.
We see you within the same game playing on the left side and the right side. How has that been for you just as far as making that transition so quickly?
I mean, it's just whatever the team wants me to do. You know, I'm just glad that they want me to play different positions because I'll play whatever position they need me to play for me to help the team win, whatever that takes.
Are there any complications that you run into, or is it just smooth for you?
You can't have complications. It's the NFL. You know what I mean? You got to compete every single day. You got to win your rep. Doesn't matter what position you're at. You got to go up against the best, so you got to win your reps and – there's no real complications because you got to figure it out.
Very mature approach by Nicholas Petit-Ferrars on there. I like the way he answered the question. And then I turned it over to Coach Vrabel to get his perspective. And here's what he had to say about Ferrer playing multiple positions in the versatility standpoint.
It's something that we're always looking for is that you have some versatility and flexibility to play more than one position. Nick's shown that, and then there's been some other guys that, you know, young guys that have been able to do that. Roger's doing that as well. Chase, you know, learning multiple positions with tight end, you know, responsibilities.
So there you have it right there, the versatility aspect. I tell you, the right tackle position is interesting because, you know, there's a potential that the right tackle that they have may not be on the roster right now. There could be some picks, or not picks, but some cuts. There could be some trades. It's just, I don't know that that's a position to be excited about right now. And actually, Jarrett Stillman has kind of been beating his drum, and I commend him for it because he got some really good feedback from Trevor Maddox, a guy who has played in the league. He got his take on both of the guys, and, you know, it's not exactly a ringing endorsement. I personally didn't even think of it this way, but as Trevor said, there's a good chance that that starting right tackle is not on the roster. But here's what he said about the guys that are on there.
What did you think of how the Petit Frere played on Saturday? I know they played him some at left tackle and some at right tackle. He started with the ones at right tackle. What did you make of his performance?
You know, I thought he was better at right tackle than he is at left right now, by the way. And I thought he was a lot better than Raiden's. He was able to stay in front of guys and not get tossed around better than Raiden's. And when I say get tossed around, that's important because, you know, Raiden's played at North Dakota State in the FCS. He didn't really face a whole lot of defenders that had a whole lot of power, whereas Nicholas Petit Frere played at Ohio State in the Big Ten. And he faced guys every week that had a lot of power, in addition to a lot of guys that were future NFL guys. So he's used to the physicality of somebody that can actually throw you places. And he wasn't getting thrown around. So I think that's good. He still needs to improve his functional strength. His part of the problem at Ohio State that he had to work through getting up to this league was being a little bit soft on the edges, meaning if a rusher was going to do a power move through either shoulder of him, he tended to get turned a little bit, right? But he seems to be in the first two preseason games a little bit better at that, at the right tackle position. I think they want somebody else to start at right tackle so he can be a swing tackle because he played both sides in college. But I think that in the first two preseason games at that one position at right tackle, he showed enough. This is Nicholas Petit Frere. He showed enough to make you think that he can continue to improve and be a contributor.
So there you have it right there. Now, if they do go outside of the current group of guys that they have right now, there are some options. Dennis Kelly, he's in Indianapolis. He signed with the Colts in May. He was out there, you know, after he was released by the Packers. I thought that would be a move to make. And before that, David Quesenberry at $2.5 million, that tender. I'm somewhat confused why they didn't do that one, because at least you have a guy who has a year's worth of starting at that position, a half a year at starting at left tackle, and a career in this system or similar scheme, a career with Mike Vrabel as a backup. So worst case scenario, if something doesn't work out with Raiders, it doesn't work out with MPF, you got that fallback option. Right now, their fallback option, Jalen McKenzie, Andrew Rupchich, who, you know, was getting some second team reps there at right tackle. So that's one option. Dennis Kelly, you hope for a release there. Bobby Hart is a name that Jarrett has mentioned from the Bills. If he should be released, that's somebody else you could get back in there. He had a couple starts for them. I wouldn't be too crazy about that. But then you look at some of the veterans, right? Nate Solder, Eric Fisher. Not crazy about those guys, but those were some of the names that popped out when you look at the guys available. Julian Davenport was recently released by the Bears. That would probably be a depth option. But the Titans made a deal with the Eagles, right? Acquired Ugo Amadi, as we opened up with. I tell you what, they may want to go back to that well and look at a couple guys there. So you got Jack Driscoll, who was a fourth-round pick out of Auburn. Very capable. Right now, you know, with the Eagles, they have a luxury, man. You talk about Jordan Mailata, a guy that they got. They used the international delegation on. They drafted him. And he's developed, you know, he developed under Jason Peters. He came along gradually. And now he's a franchise left tackle. Oh, by the way, Lane Johnson, probably the best right tackle in the game. He's on the opposite side. So they have depth there, right? They have a luxury there. And both guys are you know, Mailata is very young. Lane Johnson is a veteran, but he still has plenty of football left in him. So Jack Driscoll is behind Lane Johnson. That is an option there, right? Fourth-round pick, he's the guy that they could look to trade for. But if I was the Titans, if I'm John Robinson, if I'm Ryan Cowden, what I'm doing is getting back on the phone with the Eagles, and I'm saying, hey, look, man, what's up with Andre Dillard? Andre Dillard is a 2019 22nd pick overall. He came in. He was supposed to be the left tackle of the future. He was supposed to be the heir apparent to Jason Peters. However, Jordan Mailata just developed very well and became the guy that, you know, they designated as the left tackle, the franchise left tackle, that is. So he is someone in Andrew Dillard, 26 years old. I think if you could get him with a fifth-round pick, a sixth-round pick, I don't think that would be tough to do because at this point, you know, they want to move on, right? He's somebody that could be acquired, and you could flip him. Now, he played left tackle at Washington State in college. But, I mean, I think still just bringing that talent in and flipping him to the other side, I think that is absolutely an option. But then, again, you're looking at the future, right? This is a guy that you could – sometimes a change of scenery helps. So that's something that I would look at doing, acquiring – Andre Dillard, and he's a name that tends to pop up from time to time on trade boards, so to speak, trade rumors, and I would look that route. I was going to say another guy, but I just saw that he was kind of entrenched at right tackle. Actually, he's at right guard now for the Lions. Halapulavati Vaita, you know, while I'm thinking about Eagles offensive lineman, but he's at right guard for them, so. Nix that. But Andre Dillard, I think, is something that they should look at trading for. We'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to how everything continues to play out. They have to be at 53 players by next Tuesday. So we'll see how that works. We're going to go to a break. I think it's time for a little run TMC.
Let's go.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
All right, here we go. The music fades. The lights dim. Duke. 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 And now, starting at small forward for your Phoenix Suns, number 23, Cedric Ceballos.
And now, starring as the Sun from Sanford and Son, Lamont! What's crackalackin', man? What's going on with you, bro?
What's going on, man? Fresh off of practice, got to some things happen.
Yeah.
Always good to be in the mix, and here we are, man. I saw some receivers, and there was one that I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Specifically, but before we do that, let's talk a little bit. Kyle Phillips, he had a tough day. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you because, you know, after you made a name for yourself, mm-hmm. I'm sure, like, the way defenses approached you changed.
Oh, yeah.
And for Kyle Phillips, it's interesting because, you know, Mike Vrabel had the comment that he could go hunting for rabbits with a hammer, talked about his quickness, and every good report, like every report from all of us is glowing about Kyle Phillips.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just kind of got a feeling that the Cardinals DBs,
ooh,
they saw that and they kind of focused in on him because they really tried to be extra physical with him. So I just want to get your thoughts on if you think that is something that, you know, actually happened or what do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely. They're going to say, welcome to the NFL, and they're going to get in your face. They're going to get in your mustache. And here's the thing they're going to do, TD. They're going to challenge you. I mean, I don't care if it's practice. I don't care if it's preseason.
they're going to get in your face because all the buzz has been on Kyle Phillips and what he's doing at punt returner, what he's doing on third down. And, you know, he's one of Tannehill's favorite targets in camp. That's great and dandy. But when you start going against the number one guys and some of the top corners of the league, they are going to get in your face. I remember when I was a rookie in 1995. That's a long time ago when I had more hair. We were scrimmaging the Washington Redskins. And before I came to that camp, the buzz was talking about, oh, Chris Sanders is fast and he'll beat you deep, this and that. Oh, you don't think those defensive backs were trying to challenge you? Darryl Green was in my mustache. All those defensive backs, because they wanted to see, is this guy for real? And then the same situation with Kyle Phillips, I think that those guys are going to challenge him and say, you know what, I want to see if this guy is for real.
So it's kind of like a heat check. Let me see.
Yeah.
Let me see what's up with it.
Oh, yeah. They're going to get in your face because I'm telling you, man, when we scrimmaged Washington, D.D., when we were going on one-on-one, it wasn't no laughing and cackling. It was like it was no off coverage. It was straight press coverage. It was Iman and Mono, and they dared me to beat them. But guess what? On the first day, Darryl Green got in my mustache and he got in his stance. And the first thing I did, I said, you know, I'm gonna set the tone. I'm going deep, touchdown. Now I got him. Now they was in trouble.
And then from there, you could sell the nine.
Oh, sell the nine and change your mind.
That's right, right there.
Yeah.
Another rookie, we'll bounce from rookie to rookie, Traylon Burks. I know you had asked about him when we first got on the line here. And I will say this, it's kind of up and down with him, right? So last Wednesday, joint practice with the Bucks, he beat one of their DBs deep, one-handed catch, landed, and he got up and kind of limped away. Then later on in practice, he managed to get another long catch. And with that one, everything seemed like it was all good. Mm-hmm. But he left practice a little bit after that. Mm-hmm. Came back the next day, that Thursday, a sleeve on his left leg, played in the whole game. There was a play, actually, if you remember, just before the touchdown that Malik Willis threw. Burks was running a crosser from the left to the right. And he had cleared the first hash and was working his way towards the right one and about to clear that one. Willis looked at him, and it was all open field. It wasn't a DB from that right hash to the outside. So that's a catch, turn up field for the score.
Absolutely.
But he tucked it and didn't throw it to him. Do you think, just in watching these couple games, have you seen Burks open a lot?
You know, me and you talked about a little bit off air is – I think, you know, if the defensive back is off, I think he's doing okay when there's a free release. But I think he's struggling a little bit at the line of scrimmage because I texted you. I said, man, look, you know, him trying to get off the press, it just seems really slow. There's no explosiveness. It's kind of, you know, okay, one step here, one step there. The DBs are going to eat that up. I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's injured. I don't know if he's confused about the coverage. I don't know what it is, TD. But it's not that, you know, when he catches the ball and runs after the catch, it's so explosive. But at the line of scrimmage, it's kind of like, you know, one step here, one step there, and the DB's just riding him out of bounds or just staying on the hip. So I don't know what's going on in that situation, but he's got to improve on his releases.
One thing that I'm seeing on the releases, just to stay to that point, there's that hesitation, like that step back and then forward.
Yeah.
You got to explode off the ball.
You got to explode.
And he's not doing that. You know, it always goes back to, okay, because a lot of times, you know, you got guys who make contested catches in college. You're mm-hmm. like, hey, that's a really good thing. But he's making contested catches because he's always covered. And that was something I remember with Alshon Jeffrey. I used to always say to myself, like, okay, is that something that's going to transfer? Mm-hmm. And it did transfer to the league. Do you think that transfers for him, though?
I mean, it's got to. I mean, that's his bread and butter. Because you look at when he played against Alabama, I mean, and played those top-notch schools, he had to make the tough catch because you're not going to run away from those defensive backs when you're running routes. So I think he can, but the knock on him right now is he can't stay on the field. I mean, you can be the best back shoulder catcher, you can be the best, you know, deep threat, but if you're not available on the field, you're not going to be an asset to this team. So, you know, he hasn't really played four quarters. So can he play four quarters without coming out? Can he make the play? Because you better believe, TD, you know, when they go against those opposing defenses, a lot of those defenses are going to go cover one and dare you to beat you on the perimeter.
Yeah.
So he has to be that guy, you know, to take the pressure off of Tannehill and take the pressure off of Derrick Henry.
Yeah, now, fortunately, what they'll probably do, well, I don't even know if they'll do that, man. Robert Woods is a legit threat, but I don't know if they'll have the number one corner travel with him. So I was going to say, fortunately, Woods will face the top corner, and he'll be going against number two, but I don't know that to be the case. Right. But I tell you one guy that can change coverage, and they're really working in an effort to have him do this, and that's Racy McMath. It's funny because, you know, like you came into the league primarily known as a deep threat. Then you had to change that up to do other things. How do you think Racy McMath can do that? Or even how do you think he can make himself known as a deep threat first and then work off of that?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to establish himself. When I say establish himself, he's got to get in the first game. And I'm just throwing this out here. I'm not saying it's going to happen. But if you go 22 personnel, that's two back, two tight ends, and split him out by himself. What do you think the defense is thinking? They think it's a run formation. All of a sudden, you do what they did in Baltimore about 4 or 5 years ago, and they throw it deep to the wide receiver. If he can do that and take the top off the defense and beat the one-on-one coverage, then now it's just going to set up. It's going to get around the league. This guy can run. This guy can make plays down the field. So if he can do that, it sets up everything. And just like what me and you talk about, I love to talk receiver talk with you. We always talk about when we run the route, run the nine, change your mind. So if you beat a defensive back on the nine route and he's afraid to get big deep and you start running comebacks, you start running curls, you start running slants, you start running all those things, and the DB just got beat off the nine, then now he has the comfortability of running the routes cleanly. When I say cleanly, that means you're going to get free release because those defensive backs are afraid to get beat.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They'll be afraid to get up there, and he's a big body there too, so that'll help. From that perspective, yeah, I mean, 6'3", 220. But one of the things that he was working to do, and it's interesting with him because he's trying to establish himself as a deep threat and work off of that already. Let's talk about that next step, right? Being able to sell that nine and then find ways to throttle down and work your way back to the quarterback. What in particular is the key in converting that deep threat into the ability to get open on other routes?
Yeah, and we always talk about this, and we're going to go to wide receiver 101. You know, we always talk about the releases. You know, when you get out the release, get him out the spot. When I say get him out the spot, he's got to open up hips. He's got to sell the nine right. When I say sell the nine right, he's got to make the DB think that he's going deep. But here's the most important thing about the route is getting out of your cut, chest over your knees, exploding out of cut, as opposed to having 4 or 5 choppy steps. Have 3 choppy steps and protect the football and come back to the sidelines and make the play. And I was watching him a couple of weeks ago when I came to practice because I wanted to see, has he improved in his route run? I want to see, has he improved in his drills? He looks totally different from last year, TDY, because his chest is over his knees. He's exploding out of his cut. He's not just labeled as a track guy trying to play football. Now he's starting to look like a receiver, you know, playing football.
You coach guys up there at Montgomery Bell.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is the coaching point there? Like, how do you get a receiver to change from that to being someone who, you know, has more lean in their routes? Their nose is over their toes.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it's you got to pay attention to details because at NBA, we're not the fastest, we're not the biggest, we're not the strongest. So we have to create separation. How do I create separation? Sell the nine route, change your mind, lie with my eyes, burst off the cut. All these things that he struggled with, you know, when he came out of LSU because he had some top dogs in front of him. But if he understands that and pays attention to these details and be in Rob Moore's hip pocket, the wide receiver coach for the Tennessee Titans, I mean, his whole level would change. Because when I got in the league TD, you know, I was just known as a fast guy that ran posts, ran goals. But all of a sudden, they started to take away that deep route when they put a safety or a top. So I had to run routes, had to understand the coverage. You know, if they play brackets, when I say bracket, you have one over top, one underneath you. Who do I run the route against when it's a bracket like that? So once he understands that, I think he's going to be okay because speed kills.
Last thing, it's always, okay, how can I put this? You talk to players at different positions, and you tend to see, like, personality things, right? And number one receiver is always like that alpha, that very
absolutely
straightforward, just like that aggressive personality. Do you think that's something that Treylon Burks has? And of course, this is outside looking in, you know, from a distance. Yeah. So take it for what it's worth. But from what you've seen of him, do you think he has that as compared to how A.J. Brown came in and, you know, kind of made his presence?
I say this respectfully. I say no. You know, and you know, the reason why I say no right now, I'm not saying it can happen later on, but the one thing that A.J. Brown did is he attacked the football and he said, that's mine.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's in the stands. That's mine. If they throw it to the other side of the field, that's mine. And I think Treylon Burks has to have that type of attitude to where when it's a slant, that's mine. When it's a deep ball, that's mine. When it's a dig route, that's mine. It's not about – see, we think being a dog at wide receiver is being boisterous and yelling and screaming and, you know, hitting your chest. No, that's being an idiot. But when the ball's in the air and every time you fight for it, you claw and scratch and, you know, you diving for balls, that's the kind of dog that I need to see out of Treylon Burks.
And to his credit, he dove for a ball in the first practice. But to me, the epitome of what you just said was that pass down the middle, the post or seam route, call it what you want, Logan Woodside to Burks. Geno Stone went up there and outfought Burks for that ball.
That's it.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was his only target that game and his first target as a pro. So for me, I'm thinking, like, you got to fight harder for that.
You got to.
Am I off when I say that?
No, you're really not off. And the thing about it is, and I want the listeners to understand, we're not bad-mouthing Treylon Burks. We're talking about the receiver. So we're not talking about the kid. So I want to really clarify that.
Right.
We're talking about the receiver. So I don't want people to, he's soft and this and that. But the one thing that we want to see him is we want to see, I hope this is the right word, the fight in him. I'm fighting to get the ball. I'm fighting to say, you know what? I don't care if you blanket into me. This is mine, man. Get up out of here. And that's what we're not seeing. We're saying, okay, I got to catch. Okay, I got a one-hand catch. But what happens when you got two or three guys draped on you? I'll make it a catch.
And
that's fine.
And the reason why you could say that with such conviction and say that that has to happen is because he's shown it.
He's shown it.
That's the thing.
Absolutely.
He's shown it. So it's not talking bad about him. It's talking about you doing what you're capable of doing.
Yep.
Because we've seen that. And that's the thing. And for me, I just wonder if it's just a matter of him getting settled in or getting more comfortable. And if at some point it hits, and then we start to see that dog that we saw at Arkansas.
Yeah, and maybe it might just take one play to where, you know, somebody out jumps him and they rip the ball away from him at a crucial time. That might provoke him to say, you know what, from now on, nobody's ever going to do that to me again.
And
they take that.
And, you know, for me, honestly, and this is why I asked Coach Vrabel the question that Sunday after the game about, look, can you – draw up plays, like scheme plays to get him touches. Jet sweep, screens, now route, something, smoke, something. So this way, because you know how it is, right, as a receiver, you got to get involved in the game.
You got to get
and
involved.
I don't care who you are. If you don't get the ball early, it's a lot – you're not going to check out, but it's a lot easier to check in if you're getting the ball early. So that's why I was asking that, because it's like, okay, let's get him some touches. And then maybe you'll see that dog start to come out.
Yeah, but here's the deal. It's got to come out for the Tennessee Titans to be successful.
Yeah, one way or another.
Yep.
Pretty simple. Well, there it is right there, your weekly wide receiver dissertation brought to you. No, that's funny.
Hey, before you go, man, I got another question, or got to say something. I was talking to my receivers again. He was like, man, you and TD are awesome, man. We listen to your show all the time. But they said, man, he looks like Gary Coleman, Ralph Sampson, or Don Chaney. I said, nah, man, he looks like Sam Cassell. And they started clapping again. I was like, that's my guy.
Yeah, I mean, what can I say? I'm going to just leave it at that. So that was Run TMC. It's always good to get that wide receiver talk. I hope you guys appreciate the similarities, right? I see them between Chris Sanders and Racy McMath. That's something that, you know, I talked to. I didn't really think about that until my guy Robbie Bourne mentioned that during one of the practices. And they're definitely there. So that's why I wanted to talk to him about Racy McMath. So shout out to Robbie for making that thought come into my mind And shout out to each of you for tuning in. It's been a great opportunity to continue to talk shop, man. This season's here, man. We're into training camp season openers, a couple weeks away, man. We're just going to keep this thing rolling. Appreciate David James making this happen.
Yeah.
Make sure you tune in. Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, search Talking with TD. Rate, review. We appreciate you.